Okay. Good evening and welcome to the February 20th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and we discussed status of negotiations with the California School Employees Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay, seeing so. Let's move on to the approval of minutes. Would anybody like to make a motion on the approval of minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes
okay.
from the last meeting.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Spadafore and seconded by Mr. Peter. I do have a correction on item number, on reports by school staff, item number one. We have saved the music here as 220. It should be 225. And it's different from the one at Morro Bay, which does reflect it at 4225. Yeah, it's one event. So we would invite people to go to that. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on then to a presentation by the San Luis Symphony regarding everyday etudes. So, Dr. Valentine.
I just would like to welcome the folks from the Slow Symphony and recognize their work with the youth in our community. They've asked for some time tonight to share about a program that is operating in several of our schools, and happy to listen to what they have to share.
Thank you, members of the board, for hearing us. I'm coming to you here today as a mother of two at the Los Ranchos School. My name is Laura Albers. My children are first graders and third graders there. That's a little bit better, huh? You can't see me? Okay. First graders and third graders at Los Ranchos School. I'm also here as a representative of the executive board of the PTA at that same school, as well as a site council member. And I'm requesting that you continue the funding of the Everyday Etudes program that has been in place there since the fall. My children have come home talking about not only those composers who I'm familiar with, Beethoven and Bach, Vivaldi and the likes, but also all of the sports programs, which leads us with very, very busy schedules for our first graders and our second graders and our third graders. But what's more is it leaves a deteriorated education for those children and families who can't afford that stuff after school. Everyday Etudes bring this wonderful, wonderful experience to every single kid in the school. And I'm so pleased that my children have been able to be a part of this program. 5 minutes a day, it's easy for the teachers to fit in, and it's one more way for us to have our children's whole selves and learning experience to be valued. I have a child whose only outstanding score is in music. And he's able to get his confidence from that, which then will translate into all of his other core subjects. I have another student who can't memorize to save her life, but if she hears it with music behind it, she gets it the first time around. It's been extremely helpful to my children and those also at the school, and I request that you keep this program that has such a priceless value. Thank you.
Hello, board. Thank you for having us. My name's Marian Kaiser, and I'm a community member. I'm a music therapist and a music teacher. I'm a private piano teacher and teach preschool music in Los Osos. And I had heard of etudes last year and looked it up from a friend at the symphony, and I looked it up on my computer and checked it out a little bit, and then kind of forgot about it. And this year, while I've been teaching piano, I start to hear my kids say, oh, Mozart, I heard about that in etudes. Etudes. What's etudes? Oh, that program. And it would come up over and over with my kids from Monarch Grove, who are able to be a part of that program. And they're excited about being able to play Mozart and hearing about Beethoven. They'll tell me what they know about him and what they know about counterpoint. And and different forms of music. One of the most touching things was I was in Owen's music a couple of weeks ago, and there was a little boy in there who was doodling around on the piano, and he's picking out this piece, and he goes, "What is that?" He's asking the man there, and he looks at me, and I'm going, "Okay, it's a Bach minuet. He's playing it by ear on the piano," and his mother is going, "He's not liking piano, but he really wants to play this piece. He doesn't want to play out of the method books, but he wants our music industry to just introduce rap music, rock music, and that's all they hear. Or is it important to introduce other kinds of music in their lives?" So they'll carry it through their lives. And I guess I just have to say that I'm a preschool music teacher also, and I think Etudes is a wonderful program, but it can also not take the place of general music in our schools. And just get that little plug in there for the general music program too, because I teach five-year-olds and they leave my program with eagerness to learn music and excitement, and they look at me and their parents go, "Now what? What's next?" So anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Marianne.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Brad Kiker. I'm an advisor and educator at Cal Poly. I thank you, first of all, for letting us come and be heard this evening. I started as a community member with the Music Education Committee with the Symphony during the time when we launched the Everyday Etudes program, where we were grateful for the sound leadership of Mary Matakovich for our access to a successful pilot program at C.L. Smith School. As a member of the Board of Directors now, I serve on the Development Committee, excuse me, and can empathize with the challenges of raising money and making choices, as we are currently in the midst of raising $250,000 for music education programs alone just in this fiscal year. I can also understand the hardship then of each school site and their unique resources that they face in trying to raise the requisite funds to make Everyday Etudes possible. This program, as it supports arts education and as arts education augments learning across all disciplines, is in keeping with California content standards. So therefore, I implore the district to step into the fray and make music and the arts a priority in education and pay for Everyday Etudes in a district-wide fashion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Board, for hearing us. I'm Jamie Lewis. I'm the Music Education Director.
My understanding, and from what I read in the Monarch Flyer, which I appreciate, Dr. School is giving us previews of the Everyday Etudes. It's all classical music. Mm-hmm. Are there any plans to expand that to other genres, say jazz or country music? I mean, you know, country music's pretty much popular music, but say folk music or something like that, American roots music?
Well, we as a symphony orchestra, our primary mission is to bring excellence to the stage. Another part of our mission would be the education portion, symphonic and chamber music education. Our mission as such is completely reliant upon Western classical music tradition. So we never planned on expanding it to anything else. We found a music listening curriculum called the Bremet Taylor Music Listening Program, and that is built solely on Western classical tradition. So we teamed up with the Bremet Taylor Music Listening Program, and that's been the way that we have implemented the program, with no plans necessarily to bring it to other, to bring ethnic diversity to it outside of the Western tradition. Sure.
Oh, please, yeah.
I understand that a project is a project, and however you define it is up to the people who create it. I think the point is well taken, though, and when Brad Kiker mentioned that too, and Marian Taser about it can't take the place of an entire music program. So I think the board and the district needs to keep that in mind, that we can't say we're doing every day etude, so now we have music covered. And in my class, I play a cut from music every single day, every period as a warm-up. And for instance, I'm sure you guys are familiar with Cachaito, the heartbeat of the Buena Vista Social Club. He's a stand-up bass player. And Hugh Masekela comes in on trumpet, and they have drums. It's strings. It's instruments that are in a symphony. And as you know, many classical musicians do step it on up and move on to jazz, you know, with classical as their basis. I don't know if these guys did in Cuba. But it's the same instruments doing something very sophisticated and beautiful. So I think it would be great if we could as just keep thinking about that as a board of making sure the students have a wide range of musical exposure. But thank you for what you do.
And make sure that it's not a personality-driven program, that it's not, oh, I know somebody who could play the cello and come into my classroom, that it's not a person like you who has the breadth and the commitment to music to play it every day, but an actual integrated program that's part of every day for every classroom in across the district. So it's tough, you know. I was sharing with some principals the fact that the symphony, in order to do, for instance, a children's program that's part of the attendance at Everyday Etudes for all of our students involved, it's $14 a seat for the symphony, and we charge $5 as part of the Everyday Etudes program. To get the music van out, to get you to kids to touch instruments and be interested in instruments, it's $113 a classroom. We charge $25. So we're spending an equal amount of time, as Brad was saying, doing the fundraising part of this. It's tough, but we, you know, the district points to community partners like us and Children's Creative Project and as your biggest asset. Okay. It would be great if we could actually count on, you know, what would you like from us and how can we plan for it next year? So, thank you very much. It's been an honor to work in these Etude schools. We really hope we get to do it again next year. We don't know. We don't know if we're going to keep, if this keeps kind of going, well, I don't know if we can come up with the money. We don't know how we're going to, you know, how we'll be able to serve you if that continues.
So a question I have.
Yes.
And then I know Mr. Spadafore has a comment.
Yes.
Are you looking for commitment from the district to continue Everyday Etudes next year, something that you feel hasn't happened?
We're looking actually to shift the burden of paying for Everyday Etudes from the individual schools to the school district itself.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Spadafore?
And thank you. I want to thank everybody who came tonight and spoke. One thing that I would ask in our informational packet on the next one is to have a breakdown of what's in the schools now, what programs from the Symphony for Etudes, who's funding it, what the cost is, and then what the proposal would be to maintain the programs or extend them to all the elementary schools, just so we can see the figures. And then I think the other thing is to point out that discussing expansion of what's being presented by Symphony in our classroom is almost performing arts integration with the groups you've been working with, just so we can see where we're at with the bigger picture and where we're at with the issue regarding what you discussed tonight. Because I think at some point it's going to come back here and we're going to have to deal with the question regarding programs, integration, mm-hmm. and cost.
Mm-hmm. So what it sounds like you're asking for and what I'm thinking is, this is more of a follow-up to the study session that we had on visual and performing arts. Is that
partly, and then
sort of the process that you're thinking about, and then specifically for Everyday Etudes?
Is yeah,
that, do other people on the board have an interest in what Mr. Spadafore is asking for? Okay. Mr. Peter?
Thank you very much. We're perfectly willing to continue fundraising so that we can subsidize this program to the schools. We just need to be able to know what it is you'd like from us next year and how we can serve.
Good. John, you took the words out of my mouth. I was actually going to ask if we could gather that data in the background about what the costs are. I first heard about the program actually at Back to School Night at C.L. Smith earlier in the year, And being a product of the music programs in this school district, I actually grew up here in the 70s going to school, and my music instructor was Bozzo Coroscelli, who actually was the founder of the San Luis Obispo Youth Symphony, and he's well known as a music educator in the community. He's still a very close friend of mine. And I know how enriching and how much music touched my life growing up here. In ways beyond music, the impact that somebody spoke about, or the lady she actually left who spoke about the impact it had on her two children, and helping them learn in other subjects. And so when I first heard about this at C.L. Smith, I actually sought out a couple of parents and some students who were part of the program, and just hearing them tell the stories about how enriching it was really wonderful. So my thought was, why aren't we doing this across our district in all of our schools? To me, it just seemed like something that we should be doing. So I would very much like to know about the costs and factor that in. And the other thought was, is there any way that we might be able to fund it in part through the monies that we're getting for this year for arts and education from the state?
Any other comments from the board? Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to say that I've had the pleasure of working with Jamie at the VAPA meetings that Dr. Mitakovich is conducting. They've been extremely fruitful. I think the community, the arts community, and the education community have had a chance to come together and really start to plan towards a program that's going to put not only etudes, not only the symphony, but all of the art. And the California State PTA and the California Alliance for Arts Education are jointly sponsoring this statewide campaign, and it would really behoove each of us to have an opportunity to go out to the schools and see what's actually happening, because organizations like PTA, like the Symphony, like the Children's Creative Project, there's a tremendous amount of arts that's going on in our classrooms right now, and it's really just very powerful. And I would hate to see us rush to gather data as we're already working, and we already have a group working to try and do that. So I'm hesitant on support. I would like to see this group bring its work to fruition.
The point that John was making, and at least in my mind, was we'd love to know what the cost of the program is, so that should we make a decision about rolling it out beyond that, you know, we could make that decision based on.
Part of what's happening, at least from my perspective as somebody that's attending the meetings, is that we're not looking at just the etudes, but we're looking at all of the arts and what's it going to cost and how do we bring those to all the children on a regular basis. So if we start looking at, I'm afraid about looking at it piecemeal and getting married to one or two projects at a time, when there's a group from the community and a group from the district, there's principals, there's teachers coming together on a regular basis who are working to try to bring all of the arts to all of the children on a regular basis.
Yeah, just wanted to add that the issue, we can answer every question that has been asked, and we will answer that in the update. And so all that data, and it's not a difficult task at all to do that. The issue is that even in a finite amount of money for the arts, where does the San Luis Coastal art dollar want to go? And the answers to these questions won't necessarily answer that bigger question. That'll be answered more in the whole gestalt. But I do think it's valuable to know that at this point. You can park it wherever, in your brain, wherever it needs to stay. And then when we bring the VAPA discussion forward, you'll just have that as a frame of reference.
Okay, shall we move on? Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. The board did receive one piece of correspondence from Jerry Ambrose, who I guess is or was...
That interview process happening on March 20th.
Okay, shall we move on to public comment? Is there anyone here from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, we'll close public comment and move on to reports. Now's your big chance. We don't have any reports by students this evening. Are there any reports by school staff? Dr. Valentine.
I would normally hold off on my report until the end of the board meeting, but I wanted to, while we still had some audience here in the room, and hopefully for people who tune in and perhaps don't hang in to the end, a couple of really good announcements to make. First of all, one of our own, Don Schallenberger, has been selected as the DARE Administrator of the Year in California and will be honored in April. Yeah. And we'll be honored in April at a meeting in San Diego. And the DARE Officers Association has selected him. They're also going to be honoring Kacho Ashajian. So we have a couple of people from the Central Coast that will be honored in that fashion. The second piece of information is that we received notice today that Laguna Middle School has been cleared for a visitation for a California Distinguished School.
Excellent.
And we would expect that visitation to occur in the spring. And we are very optimistic that that will be a favorable experience for the people visiting Laguna, and that we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope that we have another California Distinguished School, none other than Laguna Middle School.
Wow. Are there any other school staff members that would like to make reports this evening? Okay. Let's move on to item number two, status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
At this time, there isn't much to report in Sacramento. They're still jockeying for position on bills. There's a lot of spot bills, which are merely position holders or placeholders for ideas being introduced. We expect that sometime in May, then the bills will be coalesced into something that we can talk about. And we eagerly await for the governor's May revise of his budget predictions. So, unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot to report tonight.
Let's move on to item number three. Mr. Miller, again, just a review of charter.
Parents who have concerns about the traditional K-12 education process and have been motivated to explore charter schools as an alternative. There are two basic funding models for schools in California, as we know. One is the revenue limit and one is the basic aid school district. Most charter schools receive a portion of their total funding from a state-provided block grant. The revenue limit districts receive a portion of their funding from the state and a portion of funding from local property taxes. As you know, basic aid districts receive 100% of their funding from local property taxes. This results in differing impacts to these two types of districts when charter schools form in their areas. In reality, the revenue limit district will lose significant dollars because of a charter school in the form of children who have migrated out of their district and into the charter school no longer are eligible to receive the per student ADA amount. Whereas a basic aid district that receives 100% of their funding from local sources has no state impact from a loss of charter school or loss of students to a charter school. In fact, may enjoy some sort of an advantage, if you want to call it that, in terms of fewer students receiving the same, utilizing the same amount of dollars. The basic aid charter school receives its funding from the state in the form of the block grant, just as a revenue limit district charter school does. In 1992, California enacted the Charter Schools Act, and it has been amended several times since. The purpose of a charter school in a general sense is to improve pupil learning, okay, I get it, encourage innovative teaching techniques, create opportunities for teachers to be involved in the design of learning programs, provide parents and students expanded educational opportunities without constraints to traditional rules and structures. Basically, they are exempt from the education code requirements in the general sense. Shift schools from a rules-based to a performance-based system of accountability, and provide competition and incentives with a traditional public school system to stimulate improvements in the public schools. Charter schools are exempt from the many state laws governing public school districts. However, charter schools must comply with state and federal constitutions, the Charter School Act, special education laws, and other laws that require governmental agencies to act in certain manners that ensure a democratic process. They would have the right to go to the County Office of Ed, and if the County Office of Ed finds that they do not meet the requirements, they have the right to go to the state Board of Education. And I don't know that to date they have denied any charter school applications at the state level. But in terms of what the characteristics are for us as a basic aid district and a charter school, it is financial in the aspects that we would lose kids but not money. And we would want to be assured that the education that is being performed at the charter school level is of a quality that we would do within our own programs. I have hurried through what was a written summary within your board book.
Is it, although we talk about a charter school in a particular area receiving just the block grant, there is room, as we know, for negotiations between the charter school and the school district based on the payment and the services that could be provided to the charter school. So, in fact, it could cost more than just the block grant, I believe.
It's interesting.
And then there's the facilities part as well.
Well, yeah, we didn't touch on that. It's in your notes, but we are required to adhere to the same facility rules as other districts are for their charter schools. We must provide them like facilities. That is the rule, and that's what we have to abide by. In terms of the negotiation process, I don't think it's allowed anymore. I think that has been superseded by law, and we were the first basic aid district to allow the formation of a charter school inside of our district boundaries. And it was under the auspices of a negotiated contract that it was allowed. But I don't believe that is allowed any longer. The state is very much interested these days in regulating the form and format of a charter school. And so they don't allow those types of activities to take place anymore.
And that agreement with Bellevue Santa Fe has been upheld and supported and is still functioning normally and well. I did have a question, and I do appreciate you moving it through to the end there, but I had a question regarding this proposed legislation where basic aid district may have to pay their revenue limit amount. Would that be our low wealth revenue limit amount, or would it...
The basic aid districts generally take care of their charter schools within their boundaries if they come to be formed anyway. So the biggest issue right now is charter schools acquiring if a basic aid district's charter school acquires students from a revenue limit district, how is that paid for? Because many times it is self-funded by the basic aid district, and then the state doesn't provide the revenues anymore in recognition of that student's identity of a basic aid district.
When we had these discussions before, was there not an issue about Bellevue Santa Fe actually receiving less than the Lucia Mar revenue limit, or was the Lucia Mar revenue limit lower than what we were paying per our students? Because I remember there was an issue about that as well.
The issue, I think, was that under the block grant allocated by the state to charter schools, that block grant was higher than the amount that Bellevue Santa Fe was receiving from us as a charter school in a basic aid district.
Question? Mrs. Dickinson.
I thought it was great that you read it because you wrote it so well, so why not share it? One question I had on page 3.2, except for some circumstances related to special education regulations, the charter school is virtually transparent to a basic aid district school. Now, I was sort of under the impression that, I mean, this makes charter schools look wonderful, by the way, and if we got rid of No Child Left Behind, it might be closer to describing all schools. But I thought they did cost even our district money to have a charter school come in because of facilities and other things.
Actually, yes. You know, there is some incremental costs that we pay to our charter school that is a matter of efficiencies on our part that we can do better than they can do. But when we negotiated our contract, we came to the realization that those kids were our kids anyway, mm-hmm. and they belong, well, all but probably 10 of them belong to San Luis Coastal, the other 10 belong to Lucia Mar. The recognition of that and the idea that, you know, they were doing a very credible job within their format, their educational format, didn't put us in an adversarial relationship with Bellevue Santa Fe. So but revenues, we don't lose any like a revenue limit district does. And in terms of expenditures, it's basically indirect costs that we have agreed to absorb, with the recognition that Walter was so great in pointing out that, hey, these are our kids anyway. So it came down to that.
Okay. Well, this was my item.
Yes, ma'am.
I had asked for an explanation, just sort of a general overview of charter schools, mostly for the benefit of the newer board members who weren't present when we did some negotiations recently, or I guess it's been about a year and a half now. So this is very concise and well-written, and I think it's just, my intent was just to get a sort of a general sense of what is a charter school and what does it mean. How does it function? I thank you very much for following through on it.
Well, I hope I got the point of your request, and that if I didn't, then please let me know, and we'll try and fill in some of the missing pieces, because the actual documents that I was able to acquire from the internet are about this thick. So there was a tremendous amount of information out there, and distilling it to two pages and then trying to cut short my presentation was a challenge in itself.
And one that you rose to, Russell. Thank you.
Yeah, well,
thank
you, I had Russell. Walter on my back, so I had to.
and I would just like to point out that for those who were on the board, remembering we did have a charter application about 2 or 3 years ago, and I think that we did the due diligence looking at the charter application to determine that it wasn't appropriate for this school district and it wasn't good for kids, and that it was a cookie cutter pro forma approach to things. And I think we have an obligation to our students to examine all charter school applications that come our way to make sure that they really are in their best interests. Okay. Any other comments on this item? Mr. Miller, you're back on with GASB 45.
Yeah, these are exciting topics, I'm telling you.
I will say the GASB 45 is exciting for a lot of school districts in California.
It is. It has gained legs, and it continues to be a major topic of conversation amongst people who want to be able to present the financial condition of districts. But Governmental Accounting Standards Board stands, that's what GASB stands for, Governmental Accounting Standards Board. Statement number 45 requires that, in capitals, other post-employment benefits, OPEBs, be recognized as an expense of an organization's financial statement. TM rights, financial and benefits in the future that we have incurred for every day of service that they put in. So if an employee works a year, they're entitled to X number of dollars of benefits in the future. And what we've done all along is we've only paid the actual direct cost of our retirees' benefits. So if a teacher, for an example, retires, the cost to the district is, in round numbers, $7,500 a year per retiree for health benefits. We have expensed that on the basis of that year's expenditure. What GASB 45 requires us to do is to have a study done, an actuarial report, which will determine how much money we have incurred through the service of that year, even though we haven't paid it. And that's what GASB 45 is all about. It has required districts to look at their financial statements and restate their liabilities according to what's been incurred, not what has to be paid. As an example, Fresno Unified has a multi-billion dollar liability for retiree benefits. Elk Grove Unified has a $3 billion liability for retirees' health benefits. Many districts are in financial distress because of those liabilities, which at some point have to be met. And with the new financial reporting rules, it's coming out of their statements today, thus turning their financial statements upside down in overnight basis. In our particular case, because of our size, we have it's 2009 is when we have to start dealing with this issue. And the very first thing that you want to do in this issue is get your actuarial report, which we have just finished. We've just received it, and we're reviewing it for accuracy and any questions we have. Under the report that we've got, the pay-as-you-go method that we've been engaged in is $775,000 per year of retiree health benefits paid. The estimated current liability of all retirees, all current employees receiving a benefit, is $11,800,000. The annual contribution required to meet that liability in a 30-year period is $1.3 million annually. We currently pay $775,000. It leaves us with a unfunded
amount. A couple of questions, Russell. Is this in response to some of the problems that have developed in corporate America, where pension plans are underfunded, and then they're either renegotiated downward or they're turned over to the government to fund, number one?
Yeah, it's a recognition that there have been about 10 school districts go bankrupt in the last 15 years. In each one of those bankruptcies, retirees' benefits has been a huge discussion point.
And then the second question is, does this become a component of the yearly compensation package for our employees?
It's a very good question, John. And the answer is under the precept of total compensation, yes, because it is a compensation piece that's negotiated in their contract. As I talk about in the full piece, the inclusion of the unfunded liability would have an impact on our net assets and could impact the district's credit rating. However, the true impact will be felt by the many interests that compete for funding on an annual basis of our limited resources. Compensation is one, ATUDS is another. Anything that you look at in terms of above and beyond the basic educational program is now going to be competing with this requirement in 2009 for the money.
Russell, will we ever get to a point with our reserves for this unfunded liability where we will have sufficient, where we can fund an annuity that will satisfy it out for outer years without us having to set aside an amount every year?
It's an excellent question, and it's one of the questions I have for the firm that did the actuarial study for us. What I want to know in detail is that the $1.2 million a year over a 30-year period will eventually become a self-fulfilling fund that doesn't require us to continually place that much money. When is that point in time reached that we no longer have to be worried about the future liability?
Well, I wonder if the annual figure represents a discount to present value for what we'll have to put away to fund.
They actually do put that in their report. They assume a 5% present value, and they assume an 8% growth of current funds and those kinds of things. But they weren't clear about how they reached that 30-year benchmark. I didn't see the math. And so I'm going to ask for the details to come in before we make benefit. And the rules changed, and now we have to deal with that. That's just reality. I think the bigger impact is for you guys, the seven members of the school board. This is money taken off of the table that isn't going to be available, as it has been in the past years, to fund those items of interest that enhance our education. You know, the fact that property values are probably static and stagnant, coupled with the increased requirements for compensation and now these future liabilities, it's going to make a different kind of budget year for next year than what you've seen in the last two or three. It's going to be a discussion that's going to be a bit different.
Okay, any other questions about GASB 45? Okay. Let's move on then to item number 5, which is a resolution number 090607, week of the school administrator, Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. This probably indicates spring is coming. When I start coming in front of you once a month with different weeks of recognition and recognition of different employee groups and volunteers and teachers and what have you. The first is asking you to pass a resolution honoring our school administrators. We know that great schools are led by great principals and great school districts are led by great superintendents, and it's a request of the state legislature and the California Department of Education that the week of March 5th through 9th be designated as the week of the school administrator.
And I would move approval of resolution number 090607. Do I hear a second?
Second. I'll defer to Mrs. Dickinson.
Mrs. Dickinson, any discussion? Mr. Buckman. Mr. Battaford.
I think this is particularly important as we recognize that the state of California has the highest ratio of students to administrators in the nation. And so that not only are our administrators doing a great job, but they're doing it under almost unbearable conditions.
Yeah. The least. There are more students per administrator in California. That's what you were saying. And this is kind of a lead-in to the comment I was going to make about honoring all the administrators in light of the
7-0.
Let's move on to item number 6, completion of ballot for CSBA Delegate Assembly. Dr. Valentine.
Well, the board has nominated the Honorable Walter Millar as a candidate for delegate to the California School Boards Association delegation. There are other candidates that are running in the region, and boards are called upon to vote for the candidate of their choice. Tonight, the board has an opportunity to vote for one of two candidates, one of which our own Walter Millar, or write in if the board should choose. And with that, open for discussion and action.
Would someone like to make a motion? Oh, please, Mr. Millar, would you like a statement?
Thank you. Well, the statement I wanted to make is after reviewing Jeannie Duggar's statement there, I'm humbled and not sure I'm in the right race here. However, I just want to remind people how embarrassing it was when Al Gore did not carry Tennessee. So I don't want to influence anybody's vote, but and Mark has already hit me up for an endorsement, apparently. Anyway, I feel satisfied that whichever one of us turns out to be the representative, that the district, our area, will be well represented, and I would appreciate your support.
I don't think we're going to let you down, Walter, since we all love you. I want to say, though, that I know Jeannie Duggar really well because I worked with her son for 2.5 years. And she is very strong on special education. Plus, she's a union organizer. When Vons went out, she was out there driving all up and down the county. She's a labor person, too. So you do have strong competition. She's good. But, yeah, you have my support, Walter. Sure, I make a motion that we support Walter and vote for Walter.
I'll second.
By Mrs. Dickinson and seconded by Mr. Peter.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I like that part of your statement that said, expanding opportunities for our students in visual and performing arts. And I also love this. This is what really hooked me, Walter, besides just knowing you. I hope to advance student opportunities and help protect California's academic freedom.
Thank you.
I just thought that was awesome that you put that in there.
Consent agenda this evening? No? Okay. Let's move on to that then. Item number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Pull? Okay. Item number 8, approval of school counseling internship memorandum of understanding with University of Laverne. Number 9, acceptance of donations. 10, disposition of surplus property. 11, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 12, approval of purchase orders. 13, approval of school attendance area boundary changes.
Poll, please.
Okay. All right. Do I hear a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I make a motion to accept 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Item number 7, Mrs. Dickinson.
I like looking at the names of people on these reports from Mr. Robinette. And I noticed new hires for certificated substitutes, Amy Bouldouin and Zubin Soleimani. You know, these are San Luis Obispo High School graduates. And there may be others in that list that I don't recognize. But Amy and Zubin were both in Sabrina's class. And when I think of Zubin, you know, coming in a classroom, I mean, that's just a happy thought. And Amy, too, is so dedicated. I actually took a class with her last quarter at Cal Poly. And she's right there. You know, she's going to be a great educator. So that's really exciting to see the young people stepping up. The other point I wanted to make is the notices of termination. That they're kind of routine. And I know they always come along with as many reassurances as possible and all that. But for temporary employees, you know, they have to go through that every year. I just want to say, you know, a word of recognition of that that's kind of, you know, uncomfortable a little bit to feel the sand shift. You just don't know for sure. Just to know we empathize with that situation.
Okay. Would you like to make that motion?
I move that we pass approval of certificated classified personnel items. Agenda item.
Seconded by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Carries 7-0. Item number 13, approval of elementary school attendance area boundary changes. And I think
Mark asked something.
There were a couple of people that had pulled this. Mm-hmm. Who wants
maybe
to begin?
Me.
I thought I heard a couple of voices.
I did too. But that probably might have been voices in my own head. No, it's okay. I move that item number 13 be approved.
Mark has
oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, Mark,
you did have
go ahead. Did you have a comment, Mark?
Yeah.
I said you did at the beginning. And you.
That's why I didn't.
Let's see. I need the sign. I need the mic.
I'm sorry. I thought asking to pull it was enough. The only reason I asked this to be pulled is, Brad, if I can just, is there any update at all on the acquisition of a school site property over in the Orchid area? Okay, thanks.
And I would just like to thank.
Real quick, as soon as there is, you will know about it. Okay, when we have an update or any progressive conversations with the city or the developers or whomever, we will report directly to the board about that issue.
Okay, the 10 acres that I'm holding is still.
Yeah, yeah. We'll make sure that's excluded.
And I just wanted to thank Mrs. Holmes and Mr. Parker for the bicycle update. That was really interesting. And one of the things that I would note, I believe there was specific language in there for working with the school district on coming up with bike lanes and safe ways of children getting to school. So I think I'd like to see us continue to work forward on that, too. Okay. All in favor of item number 13?
Someone has to move it.
Oh, you know what? That's
Mark
we have.
It.
I had the motion, but
I'll second.
Okay. Mrs. Holmes, did you catch that? Thank you. I'm sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Carries 7-0. Let's move on then to item number 15, advanced agenda.
Hearing none.
Move it along. Item 16.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing because I think we've got a pretty heavy agenda start.
Too.
The agenda season is starting, and I think we're going to be looking forward to some pretty heavy duty agenda items for the next probably 3 to 4 months. So, okay. Let's move on then to item number 16, reports by board members and district administrators. Dr. Valentine and I went to the county education forecast, which was very interesting and appreciate it. And again, I just would like to remind everybody about Save the Music, which is this coming Sunday. I believe it's at 3:00 at the PAC. I think the tickets are $12, and I'd like to see everybody out there.
Our PTA units, It will be at the Women's Center in Arroyo Grande, and for the first time, the PTA board will try to cook and serve and also participate, which means I will not be wearing a suit. I was invited to attend the Los Osos Middle School Career Day and noticed that a good friend of mine from the Tribune was also presenting, so I called the principal and was able to present, so I was able to meet the students one-on-one. Very impressed, very happy that I did it, and it was a very enjoyable day. And the last thing is more time out of my life. John was able to announce that he is now a delegate to the Democratic Convention. I, unfortunately, last week was elected chairman of the Democratic Central Committee in San Luis Obispo, so I don't know where my time is going to come from, but I'm that much more busy.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just wanted to give I just wanted to give a quick update on the Pacific Beach mock trial team. They did not get through the preliminaries because they were up against Templeton, a powerhouse. And unfortunately, I had to be out of town, so I missed the preliminaries. But I've been working with the kids at Pacific Beach and Melissa Newman for quite a few weeks, and participated in three scrimmages with other schools, including Templeton and Slo High. And every year I'm amazed at the students at Pacific Beach and how they take on not just the role of being attorneys and witnesses and expert witnesses and participating in this mock trial, but you just see this realization that they can go and do things that they perhaps didn't believe they were capable of before they started the program. And I just love it. I'm always sad when it ends every year. And the unique thing about Pacific Beach is our students don't get a chance to do this year after year, when most of the schools we compete against have farm teams that begin in middle school and go all the way up through high school. But every year, and particularly this year, we field a team of students who just do really impressive things. And what I love about them is they manage to do it as those unique Pacific Beach students that they are, and it's a great experience. I just, sorry I missed the
questionable judging that went on, but Pacific Beach did an excellent, commendable job. I hope that they're very proud. I was very proud of them and watching them perform and do that.
Teach Telethon's March 3rd, and I'm on from 4 to 7. Where is that, and what am I going to do?
you get to the Morro Bay Community Center, and you smile and answer phone calls and enjoy yourself, because it's really, really fun. Okay. Anything else?
Make a motion to dismiss.
Motion to adjourn. Thank you very much.